It's Saturday, March 28th, and welcome to Higher IQ. If you're holding a cup of coffee right now, we've got a question for you. Before 1987, there was no such thing as a $7 coffee. There were no lattes in American English. Nobody had ever ordered a grande. The entire idea that a coffee shop could be a place you'd sit in for hours, a second living room between your house and your office, didn't exist. One man saw it in Milan and built it in Seattle, and it changed how an entire country spends its mornings. In 1971, three friends, an English teacher, a history teacher, and a writer, opened a small store in Seattle's Pike Place Market. They sold whole coffee beans, tea, and spices. They didn't serve brewed coffee. The store was called Starbucks, named after the first mate in Moby Dick, and for the first decade of its existence, it was a niche retailer with a loyal local following and zero national ambition. In 1982, a 29-year-old New Yorker named Howard Schultz walked into that store and was so taken with the coffee that he quit his job selling Swedish kitchen equipment and joined the company as director of marketing. A year later, Starbucks sent him to an international housewares show in Milan. What happened next became the origin story of a $90 billion company. Instead of taking a cab from his hotel to the convention, Schultz walked. On the way, he stumbled into an Italian espresso bar. Baristas were calling out orders. A couple was talking in the corner. A man was reading the newspaper alone. People were standing at the counter, sipping espresso, and having quick conversations before heading to work. Schultz later wrote that the experience was so immediate and physical that I was shaking. He visited espresso bar after espresso bar. They were everywhere in Milan, and each one functioned as a community hub. The coffee was the product, but the experience was the point. Schultz came back to Seattle and told the Starbucks founders they were missing the bigger opportunity. Stop selling beans. Start serving coffee. Create the kind of gathering space he'd seen in Italy. The founders said no. We're not in the restaurant business, they told him. We sell beans. Schultz left in 1985 and opened his own espresso bar called Il Giornale, named after an Italian newspaper, meant to evoke the daily ritual of coffee. It worked immediately. 2 years later, when the original Starbucks founders decided to sell, Schultz bought the company for $3.8 million, merged it with Il Giornale, and kept the Starbucks name. He had 11 stores. By the end of 2025, there were over 40,000 in more than 80 countries. The concept Schultz built on wasn't his own. A sociologist named Ray Oldenburg had coined the term third place in his 1989 book, The Great Good Place. Oldenburg argued that modern life was organized around two spaces, home, the first place, and work, the second place. What was disappearing were the informal gathering spots, the pubs, barbershops, town squares, and coffee houses where people could exist in public without a transaction or an agenda. Oldenburg believed the loss of third places was weakening communities and increasing social isolation. Schultz read this idea and built a business around it. Starbucks stores were designed with comfortable seating, warm lighting, and power outlets long before most coffee shops had them. The music was curated. The baristas were trained to learn your name. The company offered health insurance to part-time employees, which was almost unheard of in retail, because Schultz believed that if the staff felt valued, they'd create a better experience. His father had been injured on the job and fired without benefits, and that memory shaped how Schultz treated workers. Everything about Starbucks was designed to make you stay. That was the point. But staying is only half the business model. The other half is pricing psychology, and Starbucks might be the best in the world at it. Originally, Starbucks had two sizes, short, 8 ounces, and tall, 12 ounces. When they added grande and venti, the short was quietly removed from the menu but never discontinued. You can still order it. The naming creates a private language. When you order a grande oat milk latte, you're speaking Starbucks. You're part of the culture. And tall sounds like a big drink, even though it's the smallest on the menu. Nobody feels like they're ordering a small because the word small doesn't exist. The pricing is even more deliberate. The gap between a tall and a grande is small relative to the extra volume. The gap between a grande and a venti is even smaller. Behavioral economists call this the compromise effect, Given three options, people overwhelmingly choose the middle one. The Grand is Starbucks' most ordered size across all beverages. And a venti hot latte contains the same number of espresso shots as a grande. 2. You're paying more for 4 extra ounces of steamed milk, not for more coffee. But the pricing is just the visible layer. The part of Starbucks' business that most people have no idea about is what happens after you load money onto a gift card or the app. At any given time, Starbucks holds roughly $1.6 billion in stored value on customer cards and app balances. That's money you've given them but haven't spent yet. It sits on their balance sheet as a liability, but in practice, it functions as an interest-free loan from millions of customers. Starbucks can invest that cash, earn returns on it, and use it to fund operations before you ever redeem it for a latte. Schultz himself compared it to the float that Warren Buffett uses at Berkshire Hathaway, where insurance premiums collected today fund investments before claims are paid out tomorrow. If Starbucks were a bank, its stored card balances would make it larger than many regional banks by deposits. Except it's not a bank. It's not regulated like one, and it pays you zero interest on the money you've parked with them. It gets better. A percentage of gift card balances are never redeemed. The card gets lost in a drawer. The app balance sits at $1.47 and never gets used. That unredeemed money is called breakage, and Starbucks recognizes it as revenue. Hundreds of millions of dollars a year in pure profit from coffee that was never poured. The company that started as a bean shop in Pike Place Market is now, among other things, a financial services operation that happens to sell lattes. The espresso in your $5 drink costs the store roughly 30 cents. The real margin is on milk and flavored syrups, which cost almost nothing at wholesale. And the real financial engine isn't the drink at all. It's the money sitting on your card. The company Schultz built is now navigating something he probably didn't anticipate. The third place concept assumed people wanted to be physically present, but mobile ordering now accounts for roughly a third of all transactions. Drive-throughs account for even more. The comfortable chairs are disappearing in some locations. The new CEO, Brian Nicol, has talked publicly about getting back to Starbucks and restoring the coffee house experience. Schultz himself said last year that the third place is not something we need to reinvent. It's who we are. Whether Starbucks can be both a mobile ordering platform and a community gathering space is an open question, but the fact that a company worth more than most airlines started because a guy took a walk instead of a cab is one of the better origin stories in business. So if this comes up in conversation, here's how to think about it. Before 1987, Americans didn't have coffee shops the way we know them. The entire concept was imported from Milan by one person who saw espresso bars functioning as community hubs and realized America didn't have anything like that. The third place between home and work was a sociological idea before it was a business model. The grande is the most ordered size because the menu is designed to make it feel like the smart choice. The venti has the same espresso as the grande. And Starbucks is sitting on $1.6 billion of your money right now, earning returns on it before you spend it, while paying you zero interest. It's a coffee company, a pricing laboratory, and an unregulated bank, all in one cup. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.